Thank you, Virginia. It's a pleasure to be here tonight. It is almost night, it seems like, with daylight savings. This is going to be a little bit different. We're going to talk about some of the things we're doing in the southwestern part of the United States, but it's going to really probably benefit from the background that both Sam and Don are going to give about the, have given about the plight of the tribal communities. So this is where I live. These are some of my sheep. We're south of the La Plata Mountains, San Juan Mountains, far southwestern Colorado. If you would look to the northwest, we would see the slopes of Mesa Verde. To the east is the Southern Ute Tribe, to the west is the Ute Mountain Tribe, and to the south is the, are the Navajo. And as I said, these are some of our sheep. It's a good thing that my wife likes to work on the farm. It's a small farm because I work with a variety. Let's see, where are we?
Just the down button.
Just the down button. Okay. That speaks for itself. Okay. I work with a variety of nonprofits, largely the Southwest Marketing Network, started by Kellogg about 8 years ago with a Kellogg grant. The variety of partners were working in the Four Corner States plus Wyoming on alternative marketing, sustainable agriculture, a lot of food system development, and a lot of work on farm to school. That's really a central part of this sort of work. And you can see some of the funders that we have at the bottom. The approach that we're taking with the tribal communities is largely as a result of some funding from the Christensen Fund, and we're trying to build the capacity of tribal communities to rebuild, as the title of this session, rebuild food systems in their communities. And this work is based on basically five premises. First, that there's a great need, and Sam and Don are going to underscore that. There's great health disparities in these communities, but there are also economic and environmental disparities. They go together. The second premise is that a good, healthy, community-based food system, I think, can go a long ways in addressing all of those disparities. The third guiding principle we have, assumption, is that it's the right, and tribal communities should have the option to design their own food system or be a part of the mainstream, for lack of a better term, the mainstream food system, or C, some of both, presumably. Take the best from both, perhaps. The fourth premise of this work is that in the 16 years I've been working with tribal communities down in our region, the capacity in tribal communities is increasing greatly. It has changed a lot in those years, and there are a lot of reasons for that, I'm sure. But this underscores even more the need for many of us to be in the background and basically put tribal community members in the driver's seat. This becomes very, very clear. I do some presentations in Navajo country, and sometimes an elder stands up and says, I want to hear this in Navajo. Well, I can't help out. So they pick somebody from the audience and they are translating along. And not a linguistic scientist, but there isn't a linear relationship between the length of time it takes me to say something and what they say. Sometimes it's shorter, sometimes it's longer. There's a lot more than just the linguistic translation going on there. So it's another good reason for us to be in the background. The final point of this work is that we have a great deal to learn, I think, in the broader food system development community about Native perspectives and cultural perspectives around the world, of course, but we certainly should be listening and paying attention to those perspectives of the people who have been working on food systems, building them, rebuilding them for centuries on this particular land. So it's really a fun project in that respect. We're trying to take a fairly broad approach to this, from field to plate and beyond. Inputs before the field, and what happens to those dirty dishes, okay, and the scraps. We won't call it waste. Okay. We are trying to take a systems view here, and I'm not a systems scientist, but some parts of this sort of work, I think, work well. The approach is on this side and some of the benefits on that side. Thank you very much. The two things that we focus on is considering the boundaries, okay? We try to push that out as far as possible. Take a broad view. What are the ramifications of what we're doing and how we produce and use and think about our food? And then taking a longer view. We'll come to this in a second. The other benefit that I think is especially important in the next column over is to, as Wendell Berry talks about it, whole solutions, solutions that don't cause more problems. Think about all the work on GMO seeds and foods. Okay? Admittedly, most people, I assume, working on that are very well-intentioned, but seems to be creating a few extra problems. Okay? So we need to be looking for whole solutions. Okay? One way to take this broader view is to look at the standard three aspects of sustainability, and this has guided us in sustainable agriculture and other fields for some time. Another way to look at it, though, that I think is more, is a richer context is to look at the reasons that people get into trying to rebuild their food systems. What are the values, and I like to call them sustainability values, that they're most interested in? Why are they coming to the table? What are they passionate about? Now, this may look like chaos, okay? It is curious. The list is longer in the social. Maybe we just need a lot more words here. But there are a lot of factors here, and certainly some of these have come from some of the, certainly perspectives from tribal communities. Sovereignty, the very bottom of the list. Food sovereignty, certainly critically important to tribal communities. Reciprocity, partway down on the social side. That whole idea that is very hard for some people who are trying to help farmers build markets and get this Excel spreadsheet out and look at the single bottom line and plan out everything. Many of the people in the communities we work with think at least some of the foods they produce should not be sold. Holy crow, that changes the whole approach. And I think we have a lot to learn from that. So there's some nice values to look at in here. And this is not an exhaustive list, of course. But we can use this to bring people to the table, acknowledge why they're there, and build on that. But as I said, I don't think it's chaos, because if you look at the actions that you take to address and achieve many of these values, they tend to converge on many of the same actions. So you actually will build a lot of partnerships in this. So it isn't as chaotic as it might look. A long-term view. This is certainly important in tribal communities, a lot of Native perspectives on this. Isn't there a good term that's probably been used a lot that's a foundation's name and a line of cleaning products for the home that are very green, the seventh generation? Okay. Whole idea. How far are we from thinking about the implications of the decisions we make now, seven generations ahead? Think about the debate that we had for these midterm elections in this country about health care, about climate change, about the economy. We're not looking ahead at all. So I think this is a critical one, and I think tribal communities can help us in that. Certainly, sustainability is a moving target. We have to look at what has happened in the past, what has worked and what hasn't. I love the example of the pebble mulch gardens in the northern Rio Grande in New Mexico. The NASA scientists who found these by looking at vegetation patterns from satellites said, and they studied them on the ground, this is mulch to preserve moisture in some of these gardens. Oh, it wasn't very important. It was a technique that was only used for a few hundred years, okay? What about minimum tillage and a lot of the techniques we have in our sustainable agriculture today? Okay. So it gives us a good perspective, I think, as well. Okay. Now, many of the things we're looking at focus on local food, and a lot of this is certainly ingrained in the local food movement, which is critically important. I have no idea why it's catching on. I don't want to ask too many times, okay? It's wonderful, and we need to take advantage of it, because the attention span of the American public is somewhat short. So let's take advantage of this. But I think there's a lot more to just having that food close. Okay? If we look at the people who are after local food, they're after a lot more values that come from talking to the producer, understanding how the food is produced, what is in it, what are the implications for the farmer, the farm worker, the land, the animals, and the environment around it. So there's a lot more behind this, and it's a very rich area. A lot of groups, and these are some of the tools and some of the things we're exploring with tribal communities, but assessments have been done, food assessments in communities. And First Nations, it's due by Mark Roberts isn't here, but they put out a few years ago a food sovereignty workbook to do this very thing specifically in tribal communities and looking at your assets and looking at your opportunities, looking at the issues that are facing you. We did one in La Plata County, the first one funded by USDA in the state, and it was very helpful in starting the discussion about what we meant by a food system and food security, access to good food for everybody. So this is another great technique. Participation in the network, in the who comes to the table, basically. Who do you need to recruit in order to have a good discussion about food systems? And I like this approach, and we've worked on this with on state level with Cindy. Cindy's back here someplace. There she is. Food and nutrition people typically come to the table, okay? Agriculturalists come, not the conventional farmers as much, the new ones that are producing that may be new to the field and producing ready-to-eat foods, fruits and vegetables. We don't get many environmental groups to the table in these discussions, okay? We do get a lot of environmentalists. Most of us who worked in sustainable ag and a lot of this are environmentalists at heart, okay? But we don't get the environmental groups. We have some work to be done there. And economic development, we typically don't get those people who can invest in the infrastructure that we're going to need in these communities to really have good food systems. They don't typically come to the table. Okay, plenty of exceptions, but those are the exceptions. Then the other part of this I'd like to point out, just in any community, we need a diversity of people. Oftentimes, we have a small group, we're preaching to the choir, we don't have the critical mass to get things done, but we don't have the diversity of people in the community, and this is terribly important in terms of socioeconomic factors. If you don't have that, you don't have a good sustainable food system. That engenders ownership, and that in itself engenders sovereignty, and this idea of food sovereignty is so applicable to the tribal communities. I like to shake things up in non-native communities and talk about this too, because you really do have to take control. Everybody has a food system. It may be one that you control or one you don't control, and it behooves you to take control of it. But for tribal community, that added dimension of actual governmental sovereignty is very important. So, farm to school, of course, is one of those things that just captures everybody's imagination. I wish they understood how hard it is. It's nice that it's the one thing that people focus on, because in order to do this well, you have to change the whole food system, policies and so forth down the line. We have one of our schools in our neighboring town, a Montessori school at the Southern Ute Tribe. The only red meat they serve is bison, from their own herd or from a neighboring herd, processed in the USDA packing plant that we're lucky enough to have in town. And they have the heads of the elk and the bison around the cafeteria. They eat home style. What better connection with your food? Okay. Lots of wider benefits to farm to school. The one that I really think is critical is here. Challenges are cheap food policy. We think we can get good food from local sources into the schools for 6 cents a meal, we're not going to get there. We're going to find some way to greenwash this whole effort. So we have to think about spending more and getting more true income to the producers. And this is very difficult when we're talking about hunger and so forth. We have to be looking at livable wages for people in communities, obviously, in order to make this work, including the farmers. One of the things I like to do, just a back envelope calculation I've done for our county, and we're getting a tool together to show others how you can do it. Very simple data from Bureau of Labor Statistics. You just take your population, apply the standard food purchasing habits. And for our community, this is how much money is spent on selected items, $129 million. We only have 50,000 people in our community, 18,000 households. So you point this out, there's a lot of money to be had for some certain producers. Really, 2 minutes, okay. We look at traditional foods. This is Gloria Murphy, south of the Hopi on the Navajo. And yes, we do get nice big ears of corn from this sort of a growing field, okay? The sheep that we grow, Navajo Chura, are well adapted. They were endangered because of some of these efforts to decimate the Navajo tribe by getting rid of these beloved sheep, and they're the focus of tradition for many of these communities. Grass-fed beef. This is one of the things that could change the economic, environmental, and health aspects of the beef industry in the West enormously. The single most important thing we could probably do. Wildlife-friendly farming, okay? Coexisting with wildlife, okay? This was around the corner from our place during the drought of 2003, pretty sad. We're gonna see more of this, it looks like. Our snowpack is diminishing. We're working on climate-friendly food systems, trying to look at mitigation as well as adaptation. This is a map of Southwest Colorado, and the stippled area shows where you can grow dryland corn, and I like this because it points out maybe we have to be thinking about not irrigating. Heaven forbid in Southwest Colorado, the water buffaloes, different buffaloes, would just have a fit with that. But maybe we have to look at how the Anasazi Ancient Puebloans did this. And we had a researcher that developed from some peat bog corings what this must have looked like, that same map. Okay, this is today, that same map about 1,000 years ago, much bigger. And you can see Mesa Verde, wonderful place to grow corn. You can look at this just a couple hundred, basically 100 years later, and you can see how that's contracted. Long story, but this is about the time that the ancient Puebloans left the area. This could have been one of those reasons. I'm particularly interested because I live right here, and I'm wondering with our climate changing what I need to be doing on my small plots of land as well. So, in sum, basically, food system development is a very powerful tool. I think we can not only go to our elected officials, whether that's a chapter or whatever, and say, would you help us develop our food system? We can actually go and say, we've got some ideas for redeveloping a food system, and we think we can help you to address the cost of healthcare and climate change impacts and economic development issues and cultural community revitalization, whatever form that might take. So I think we have a very powerful tool here, and we're very excited to be working with these tribal communities, taking the best of what we found across the country. The Oneida, White Earth, Tohono O'odham have some wonderful food system projects. Take that knowledge and put them together in usable forms. Take them to these tribal communities. We have a lot of partners in our Southwest Market Network, and ask them, are these relevant? Are these going to be effective? If not, let's make them effective and build their capacity to take it and run. So that's the hope. So thank you very much. Okay.